Welcome to the beginning of the super terrific happy hour.
Super terrific happy hour.
A bunch of us are talking about happy hour.
Yes, welcome to episode 72 of Super Terrific Happy Hour. My name is Matt Neal. I'm the movie reviewer here at the Warrnambool Standard. I'm joined by fellow movie buff, Jono Peck.
All right.
With today, we are going to talk about Hollywood market correction, which sounds kind of drab, but is actually really quite fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Theory. That, do you want to tell me where this kind of comes from, Jono?
I learned about this from Bill Simmons, the Podfather.
Is that his real title?
No, that's one of his things. Anyway, Bill Simmons used to work at ESPN, and he was doing a podcast with Wesley Morris, who was Grantland's film dude, and they talked about this concept of market correction, where I guess one actor's career has been hurt by the success of another who is a similar cast type.
Yeah.
Have you got a more specific definition there?
This is from thedissolve.com. Just that they're talking about the same podcast from last year. That when one actor, the Hollywood market correction is when one actor ends up having the career another one seems destined to have had.
Mm.
And there are some examples which we're going to discuss
Matt's not sold on the
theory. I kind of think it's a bit of a load of crap, but
that doesn't mean it's not very interesting.
It is very, yeah, true. And I think maybe there is some validity to it, but anyway, let's discuss.
So I've been watching Lost lately. Rewatching Lost, I should say.
Okay.
So I've just watched it a few times.
Yeah.
And one of the stars of this show was Josh Holloway, who seemed destined for great things back in, I guess, 2006, 7, 5. There was rumors that he was going to be Gambit, like, you know, there have been for so many actors. He's the suave Texan, the smooth but kind of greasy con artist, and of course Matthew McConaughey exploded after that show finished and took all the southerner roles that were good, and I feel like Josh Holloway could have had that career if things had gone a little differently. Do you recognize him?
I'm looking at his photo now and I'm just trying to think. I don't think I've seen him in anything.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And he had a small role in Mission Impossible Ghost Patrol, apparently.
Mm. And he was on Community.
He was in one of
the paintball episodes of Community as well.
Ghost Protocol. And an episode of Community.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
He was really good on Lost. I will maintain that he's a good actor and he has a good look about him. He would have been a really good Gambit. Even though Gambit, I guess, is French-Canadian.
Just one thing, though. He's from California.
Mm. But he does a really good southern accent.
Okay, right.
I thought he was from Texas by his portrayal of Sawyer on Lost.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Right.
And that got me thinking about this theory. Of course, the main example used by Simmons and Wesley Morris was Michael Keaton and Tom Hanks, because they were both funny men who had a bit of chops for drama, and they were kind of going shot for shot in the late 80s.
Before we get carried away, before we go off on that thing, is it possible that Josh Holloway's career was actually replaced by Taylor Kitsch? If this theory is true, I like your McConaughey thing, but...
Yeah, I thought about Taylor because he's another Gambit.
But he actually did play Gambit, yeah, and was headlining movies and has a very similar kind of look.
Mm.
I don't know. And the Gambit thing, but yeah, okay.
I think Holloway does a better Texan accent. Even though Kish spent like 7 years doing Friday Night Lights, so
I don't know. This is the thing about the theory that I find odd is because you're going to pin it down to one actor when you can go, well, maybe it was this other guy,
and that
seems equally valid. One of the big examples,
Keaton and Hanks.
Yes.
So if you think of Keaton now, you kind of think Batman,
Beetlejuice, and then nothing, and then Batman. Yeah.
Multiplicity,
which is not totally fair, because he was great in a small role in Out of Sight, and what's the crap Tarantino movie?
Jackie Brown.
Yeah, that's it. And
it's the only one I didn't like, so it must be that.
Yeah, yeah, the same. And so you know, and he pops up in a few little things, but yeah, there's pretty much it's Beetlejuice, Batman, and then nothing, and then Birdman. Yeah. So the theory goes that Hanks and Keaton were both going for similar kinds of roles. The funny, the vaguely eccentric kind of is don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, well, what was Hanks doing in the late 80s? Big.
The Burbs.
Yeah.
Money Pit.
And Simmons has made the point that when Keaton was doing well with Batman was kind of when Hanks stumbled a little bit. He did that Volcano movie.
Joe vs. the Volcano.
Yeah, Joe vs. the Volcano, a couple other kind of flicks. And then I guess Philadelphia or Forrest Gump, whichever one of those came first.
Philadelphia, yeah. That's where his career really turned around.
Yeah, that turned Hanks around, and at the same time, Keaton started to stumble. So that's the logic behind that theory.
Right. The Dissolve.com, their article about it, says that theory may have something to it, but it ignores the fact that there's, as it says here, the irreducible Keatonness of what Michael Keaton brings to his roles, an unstable element that informs his best performances. And I totally agree with it. There's something about Michael Keaton, especially in his early work, and Birdman especially, that this unhinged kind of bubbling beneath the surface quality that Tom Hanks never had. And that's why I don't think that I agree with the Dissolve saying that it doesn't, that idea doesn't really work in that case, because there's something very fundamentally different about the way they play roles.
Not saying that they're the same actor. Keaton has that available. He doesn't have to use it all the time.
But it's in almost everything he does. That's the thing. Like, every Keaton role, there's always that thing beneath the surface that Hanks never had.
So then why did he not find any good roles for the better part of two decades?
He just picked the wrong ones. I mean, I think this is more... I don't think this... This is where I have a problem with the theory. That it's just all comes down to one other actor. Because I think there's so many other factors in play here. It comes down to, you know, role choices, really. And, you know, trying to do different things where an actor feels like their career needs to go. So, I don't know how many people probably passed up Philadelphia thinking...
HIV.
Yeah, do I really want to play a HIV sufferer, a gay guy in this era, like early 90s? Yeah. Is this really what I want? It's a risky role, but it turned to be like the absolute career maker of stage two for Hanks.
Yeah.
Where, you know, so many people would have looked at that role and gone, nah, not touching it.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting, I read a quote from Sean Connery, turned down playing Morpheus in The Matrix and Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. He read the scripts.
Oh my.
He read the scripts.
That would have been a totally different film.
Yeah, he read both the scripts and said, I don't understand any of this. And then, as a result, and they were massive films, someone came to him with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he went, I don't understand this either, but I'm going to check it, you know, because he'd had these other failures, misses that he didn't understand. So he took League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which ended up being his last on-screen performance.
Mm.
And it was an utter bomb and a piece of crap. But, you know, so choices comes down to a big thing in this. And I think that, you know, Hanks suddenly gets all Michael Keaton's roles? No, I don't think so. I bet you Keaton probably looked at Philadelphia at some point, maybe, and went, no, not for me. And that was the deal. That was what changed things dramatically. You know, and in the 90s, what Keaton was doing things like Pacific Heights, and The Dream Team. You know, if anything, you could argue that Michael Keaton's career was usurped by the likes of maybe Kurt Russell, Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, all these male leads who were taking any of these sort of roles in the middle ground of not massive films, you know, not headliners, but somewhere in the middle there, that there was all these sidebar movies that any of those guys could have taken. Like Pacific Heights, you know, any of them could have played that, and even probably could have done a comedy lead in The Dream Team, you know, things like that.
Okay, interesting rebuttal. Let's move on. You mentioned, who did you just mention? You mentioned Kevin Costner.
Yes.
And the Wesley Morris's original guy for this theory was Costner and who?
Mark Harmon.
Yes.
Best known as Jethro Gibbs from NCIS.
Yeah, not a household name in my opinion.
No, but the thing is that, yeah, and this is where the theory kind of works. The one where I kind of go, yeah, you know what, that sort of makes sense.
Mm.
So Mark Harmon, in the 70s and 80s, looked like he was going to be the next big thing. I'm pretty sure People magazine called him sexiest man alive in the 80s or something.
Yeah.
And the theory goes that Costner came along, and all of a sudden, all the roles that were intended for Mark Harmon
went to Costner.
Hmm.
And do you put weight behind this idea?
Well, given that Harmon had...
have a physical resemblance.
There's definite similarities in the way they look. In fact, if you Google both their names, it refers to, like, Mark Harmon as the poor man's Kevin Costner, you know. Because Harmon seems so destined for greatness at one stage, it seems weird that it never eventuated.
Yeah.
But is Costner purely the reason for it? No, I don't know.
It's a few of those kind of...
See, what about Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, what about him?
Well, you could make the same argument that Quaid's career kind of got hit a level that it hit a ceiling, basically, at the same time that Costner was kicking goals. And those guys have a kind of similarity to them.
Is he the president in Independence Day?
No, that's Bill Pullman.
Who was the crop duster in Independence Day?
That's Randy Quaid. Yeah. Is he Dennis's brother?
I assume that they must be. It's not that common of a surname.
Dennis Quaid. Is that guy. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm going to mention a few more of these people who...
All right. I'm going to keep trying to shoot them down.
So, this is another one that Wesley Morris tweeted about, because Fallon had one guest and then the next. Orlando Bloom and Justin Timberlake.
Who's short-circuiting whose career there?
Who do you think?
Well...
Look, Bloom, when Lord of the Rings came out, Orlando Bloom was hot property. He was a big deal.
Prior to that coming out, he was nobody. Legolas made
it. Yeah, I know. So it looked like he was going to be huge. He was attractive. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So he's got two massive franchises. Yeah.
And then Timberlake decides, I'm going to do movies. He gets Social Network. He gets In Time. He gets the rom-coms. And,
oh, your Friends with Benefits.
And suddenly, you know, that's the new guy for that type of role. And what's Orlando Bloom done since Timberlake rose up? Very, very little, I would argue.
You might be right. But
I might be right.
You might be right that he's done very, very little. But I don't necessarily agree with that, because I think the big difference there is that...
You don't think they would be going for the same roles?
No.
Like, you couldn't see Orlando Bloom in No Strings Attached or Friends with Benefits, whichever one.
No, because there's a fundamental difference here, and that is that Orlando Bloom is not a very good actor, but Justin Timberlake is a very good actor.
Well, that might be why he got the roles. But you can't say that he wouldn't have been going for the same ones.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a very based on, I guess, look and style.
Yeah, no, see, I see there's a Timberlake, to me, feels like he could be more of an actor's actor, whereas Bloom is more of the pretty boy, you know. He did a lot of stuff where he's like the pretty hero next to the tough hero, like, you know, in Troy or in Kingdom of Heaven. You know, when he stretched out to try and do serious stuff like Elizabethtown, which absolutely flopped, and, you know, he's done nothing else, really. In fact, he's returned to the Lord of the Rings world already for The Hobbit.
He did.
And he's about to return to the Pirates of the Caribbean. I think it's just he can't get roles more than anything because he's not a very good actor. I don't think that he's been replaced or that his position within the Hollywood market has been usurped by Timberlake.
Okay.
All right, give me another one.
I'll give you some more.
I'll shoot him down.
I'll give you some of my own and some of that I've just come across.
Okay.
Tobey Maguire and Elijah Wood.
That's a pretty good one.
That's a good one.
That is a
he
good
was
one.
Big, like Spider-Man, Wonder Boys. He had some good things going, Seabiscuit. And then, I guess, Lord of the Rings happened. Elijah was cool again. You also had other people, like, I guess Daniel Radcliffe is in that same space now. They get confused by a lot of people because they've got that kind of small boyish thing happening.
Like the eternally youthful kind of...
Yeah, like they could still play...
They could still play
a high school kid.
And they're like 40, yeah.
And Toby was in Gatsby, but that's pretty much the only thing he's done of any interest since Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, he hasn't taken a lot of roles, really. He's done a bit of producing work. I think he's just been... Tobey Maguire's just been taking it easy, by the looks of it. Like, since Spider-Man 3, and not counting a cameo in Tropic Thunder...
Yeah.
He's been in, like, 5 films over almost 10 years.
Yeah, and because we have people like Elijah Wood and Ratcliffe and Topher Grace probably looked like he was going to try and take that kind of spot at 1.2. We don't want Maguire. Like, we're not going like, when's the next Tobey Maguire movie coming out? Because that space is filled and it's only so much room.
But
that's the theory.
So, okay, so you're saying, so who's replaced who then?
Elijah has replaced Toby.
Well, who's out there going, wow, when's the next Elijah Wood movie coming out?
I love Elijah Wood.
But you don't go,
okay,
Elijah Wood's in this movie, I've got to go and see it now. Or you're going, I wonder what he's got coming up, you know.
Okay.
I don't think he's...
You're just nitpicking now.
No, I thought...
I'm just talking here and you're nitpicking.
No, I thought my job in this pod was to shoot down this
thing. Okay, Aaron Eckhart... And yeah. John Hamm.
Who's usurped who here?
John Hamm, obviously.
What's he done aside from Mad Men?
He was in The Town. He's in a lot of comedies. He's in that kind of cool kids pack with, you know, Melissa McCarthy, and he was in that Bridesmaids. What's the name? Kirsten Wiig. He's in that cool posse.
Right. I did see, actually, a really cool show, a little mini-series with him and Daniel Radcliffe were both in.
Yeah.
Young Doctor's Handbook or something.
Yeah, that's on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, that was really cool. But he's not leading films, though.
Well, that's because he just finished Mad Men.
But even, like, he didn't even have the big lead film while he was doing that, which a lot of actors do, that while they're, you know, while they're hot, they've got to go out and do a big lead movie at the same time.
Yeah, but what's Aaron Eckhart been up to?
Well, he was the lead in aside from Dark Knight and playing Harvey Dent.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago.
7 years ago.
7 years
ago. He was the lead in...
I was still in uni.
Okay. He was the lead... That doesn't seem like that long ago to me. He was the lead in Battle Los Angeles. He played the president in Olympus Has Fallen, which is getting a sequel. London Has Fallen.
That wasn't a good movie, was it?
Well, it did well enough to get a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually beat White House Down, which was the whole two films at the same time about the same thing. And I think, I'm pretty sure Olympus Has Fallen was the winner there, even though White House Down is awesome. So he's going to be leading London Has Fallen.
Yep.
He was the lead in that really bad flop, I, Frankenstein. But the thing is, he was the lead in it. And it looked like it potentially was going to be a big thing, but
it didn't. Did you not think that he was going to do better than what he has?
I don't know. I really like him. And
Thank You for Smoking, wasn't he?
How good is that movie?
That was a long time ago as well.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
But John Hamm's star is on the rise, even though
He's leveling out. I don't think he's going to be...
Nah, he's very popular.
He's peaked.
He's very popular.
We have reached peak Ham.
I don't think we have.
I think we have.
I think Ham is just beginning.
I think we've had all the ham we can handle.
He did a really good Boston accent in The Town. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I'll pay that. But again, he was like fourth name down on The Town.
Who was third?
That's like Renner. Who was the female lead in it?
I don't know.
I want to say Melissa Leo, but I think I'm wrong.
Was Casey Affleck in that movie? Probably not. But
just googling everything in this one.
I really like Casey Affleck. I just want to take this time to say.
See, if this theory worked, it's possibly that there was one too many Afflecks already before Casey came along. The market couldn't handle two Afflecks.
Mm. Well, there you go. The theory is proven.
Casey Affleck. So according to the Wikipedia listing for The Town, he's actually third.
Yeah.
But when I think of that movie, I didn't think of him. Rebecca Hall is who I think of.
But Mad Men's not that big over here. It's massive in the States.
Oh, yeah, like, I know
He's hot property. I'm just putting it out there.
Okay, but he hasn't capitalized enough on it to...
Just be patient.
...cock block someone else for roles.
Be patient. Ron Livingston and Kyle Chandler. They look very similar. This is one of those... They look the same.
We're just getting into doppelgangers.
No, this is like Kyle Chandler's having a good career. a good late career, you know.
Since Super 8.
Well, he did Friday Night Lights, Super 8. Yeah. He was in King Kong, but he didn't do much. And he was also in a very recent film.
It was in The Wolf of Wall Street. He had a bit part in that. He had a bit part
he
in...
He was a cop, yeah.
Argo, Zero Dark Argo. 30.
That was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
So he's doing some meaty roles and...
He's working with...
And Bloodlines, which is a Netflix series that came out this year, was really good. Do you want to hear some more? We're going into doppelganger territory here.
Yeah, go on.
Zoe Deschanel and Lizzie Kaplan.
Who also kind of look like Katy Perry.
Yeah. What else have I got? Greg Kinnear and Rob Lowe. See, Rob Lowe's had a resurgence late in his career.
Yeah, that's because he... Yeah, his career didn't get usurped. He slept with an underage woman and filmed it, and the tape got out, and then his career went to the dogs.
But it's back.
But it's back, because they have a short memory about these things.
And I feel like Greg Kinnear could have been doing better than he had if Rob Lowe hadn't come back. I like Greg Kinnear.
Yeah, so do I. Is he really doing that?
Well, he's not doing terribly. Was he in Boyhood? No, that was not him. that was Ethan Hawke.
Yes, but in a very Kinnear-like role.
Yeah.
Yeah, Greg Kinnear hasn't had anything really big for a while.
Mm.
No. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like Emma Stone's replaced Lindsay Lohan, and that's through her own fault of similar to Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
Her career
you're bringing it upon yourself.
Spiraled.
See, this is where where I have a problem with the theory in general is because there's so many other factors in it. Including self-sabotage.
Well, picking bad choices and self-sabotage are factors that were considered in the original theory.
Yeah.
But because of this other person's success, it's hindered that other person's chance to get back in, I guess, is the theory.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I understand the theory, but I just don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah.
There's one case I can think of where maybe... I mean, the Mark Harmon... Costner one is compelling. I'd like to know if they were applying for the same roles, because when the theory actually really holds water. So I think there's maybe some sliding doors moments where someone has gotten a role that someone else hasn't. Yeah, I'm going to say Tom Selleck, who turned down Raiders of the Lost Ark mostly because he couldn't do it because of his commitments to Magnum PI. So Harrison Ford gets a gig and suddenly becomes the biggest actor on the planet.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, being in Star Wars wasn't a fait accompli to a great career. In fact, Harrison Ford is the only one who has gone on to a massive career after that. So Indiana Jones is really the career maker for Harrison Ford. Think about a different universe where Tom Selleck plays Indiana Jones and the career Selleck would have had compared to Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And I know this is like a... It's a sliding doors moment, but that's the only time I can really see where this Hollywood market correction theory holds real water is when you can actually see this is the point, this is where it shoots off. And, you know, if Tom Selleck had played Indiana Jones, there's probably all these roles subsequent to that that would have opened up to him.
Yep.
That instead Harrison Ford would have been first came off the rank to be in The Fugitive or had the power and the clout to take roles he wanted, like Witness or, you know, Blade Runner or, you know, all these kind of things.
Air Force One. Get off my plane.
Regarding Henry, you know, all these kind of things that could have been Selleck-worthy roles. But Selleck probably never got considered for them because he never got to play Indiana Jones.
Yep, maybe Harrison Ford would have been in Quigley.
Maybe. And then Harrison Ford would have come to Warrnambool.
Yeah.
But...
And he might live here and we could be friends with him.
Yeah. And he would have already done Han Solo at that point.
But we wouldn't care who he was because he wouldn't have been Indiana Jones.
No, but he would have been Han Solo still.
Because
that was prior to that.
True.
And he would have been in Apocalypse Now still. So, you know, there you go. A little bit role in that. So that's one that I can see it really working.
Mm.
What
happened to Ewan McGregor? Someone must have market corrected him. Because he was a pretty big name around Star Wars. Phantom Menace. Maybe that was what happened to him.
I think it's like, hey, you're in the Star Wars prequels. You can't get another gig. Much like Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Natalie Portman survived that. So did Liam Neeson. In fact, Liam Neeson kind of, I think his career got a real boost out of Phantom Menace.
Because he was kind of doing smaller, like Rob Roy was his big thing before.
Yeah, lots of very serious kind of dramas.
I didn't honestly didn't know who he was until then, but I was 12, so that could be why. But he's done, he's somehow become an action hero, and it's an era where we don't have like standout action heroes like we used to. Actually, Bill Simmons, we mentioned earlier, has done a great article. It's the championship belt of action heroes, and it was very clear every year up until, you know, it's kind of this modern era where we don't have a Bruce Willis, Sly, Arnie.
Well, we still have all those guys, and they're still having to do. They're doing the old man action movies now. They're doing Expendables.
Yeah, but we're in an era where it's been passed around like The Rock and Vin Diesel and who else? Like Tom Cruise has even had it at some points. Yeah, Statham, and it's just not clear as it used to be.
Mm. Tom Cruise is the best action hero we have at the moment.
I mean, I can't argue.
Can I run one by you?
Yeah, of course.
Now
I'll try and pick it apart.
Yeah, good. Okay. Christopher Walken.
I'm already laughing.
And possibly Al Pacino. Now they were in big movies, but Walken was never a lead in films. He's always been
the bad guy,
or the number two on the, you know, like in Deer Hunter below Robert De Niro, like, and Christopher Walken actually auditioned to play Han Solo. So imagine.
I thought that was just a Saturday Night Live sketch.
No, I think George Lucas's original pick was actually Christopher Walken. That would have been a very different film. But I think Pacino took a lot of lead roles that Walken probably would have had, potentially. I feel like there's some kind of maybe market correction there. Only because Walken, who is a great actor, never had the leads. But again, that's possibly his own oddness that kind of limited his lead capabilities.
I imagine there are a lot of kind of Italian-American actors who feel like they could have been big if De Niro and
Pacino had been on the set. I guess that one kind of maybe, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson.
This is the Affleck thing again. There's only room for one Wilson in this town.
No, I quite like when those... I like seeing brothers in movies together. I feel the chemistry. It's real.
I'm trying to think of some other ones, but I don't really... We were talking before we came in here, though, about that maybe there's a stereotype that you can only have... The theory might apply to a stereotype of role.
Yeah.
Not necessarily about actors sort of blocking each other, but...
The fat white guy.
The fat funny man. Is there room in Hollywood for more than one fat funny guy at any one time? Because, you know, when John Candy was it, he was it. And then Chris Farley was it. And then...
We're going through all the people who've died. So who died Who died next?
Well, I was
going
to say John Belushi in there as well. But... Yeah.
Well, it had a bit of a gap, and then Kevin James.
And then, and now we have Kevin James. But is there ever, you know, while Kevin James is doing this role, there's no other kind of fat funny guy, is there? Not that I can think of. No. And when John Candy was doing it, and because Belushi was a little bit different, but when John Candy was doing it, I don't think there was really another one. Maybe Dom DeLuise. I don't know. When Chris Farley was the go-to fat guy, who else was there doing those roles?
There's always a fat white guy on SNL at any given time as well.
Yeah, and I guess...
It's like Horatio Sands, and now there's another guy who's the new Horatio Sands.
Right. And as difficult, this might be difficult to talk about without coming off as racist, but...
We'll try.
But the black funny guy.
It's not just the black funny guy, because there's tons of them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's say, like, but the mega draw card to the box office. I was just off the top of my head. It's a half-baked theory, so give us some space to talk here.
Half-baked. Chappelle.
Yeah. it kind of went Eddie, Chris Rock, Martin Lawrence, and now I don't know who it was 10 years ago.
It almost could have been Chappelle, but he decided
to do his
TV show.
I'm talking about movies.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, he was just starting to do movie stuff and then went, I'm going to go and do this.
So whoever it was 10 years ago, maybe it was Tyler Perry. I never really got onto him. But now it's Kevin Hart.
Tyler Perry's movies don't exist outside of America. Yeah. Basically.
So now Kevin Hart seems to be in, like, every movie that casts a black
comedic lead.
Yeah. Which maybe it's because he's the one getting them made. It could be. It might not be a, you know, he's the only one that's going to draw, but it is interesting how these things seem to evolve.
Mm. Yeah, and I think I was going to suggest that Will Smith's career was kind of running at the same time. There was a crossover with Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
And he was actually doing some of those. He was the black comedic lead as well. Like,
yeah, but I'm talking like the cheesy comedies, like Big Mama's House and anything Kevin Hart would do.
Yeah, okay.
And
Eddie Murphy's latter career stuff.
Yeah, like Nutty Professor and
those kind of
But Chris Rock never really had a great Hollywood career, I would say. Like, he's been in some good movies, but I wouldn't say he's got like a huge list of his films that the others probably do. You can look that up if you want.
He never.
Like, I'm thinking off the top of my head, there's one like I Still Love My Wife or something like that. Down to Earth. You know, he's just had Top 5 come out last year, which is meant to be really good, but I haven't seen it, and that's not really his era that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And he had bit parts in Dogma and Lethal Weapon 4 and things like that.
He's never really held a film, held a big film himself as the headliner, I don't think.
And I don't think he's tried. Like, he hasn't really had bombs so much. In like big attempts at you know, doing an Adam Sandler kind of movie,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's because he's just been focused on his stand-up career.
What about the tough Aussie beefcake lead? So Mel Gibson,
yeah,
replaced by Russell Crowe.
Oh yeah,
replaced by Hugh Jackman.
Yes, and now we have
a Hemsworth on the go.
Ooh,
is that
we had a very small. Period of Sam Worthington as well.
Yes, we did. Yes,
very small, like Terminator and Avatar, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, he may get a resurgence with the Avatar sequels, all 500 of them that James Cameron is apparently making at the moment. But yeah, is it there only room in Hollywood for one strong Aussie lead?
I don't know. Guy Pearce and people have kind of held.
Yeah, but he never had those big, tough guy roles. Okay. You know, and to the point where in LA Confidential, he is the pencil pusher kind of guy next to Russell Crowe's Bud White, or whatever the character's name. And people actually made a point of mentioning, like Guy Pearce did an action movie recently, like a sci-fi action where he was the lead, and people went, wow, this is the first time he's actually done this kind of tough guy lead role before. It was set in like a zero gravity, a prison in space or something.
Okay. He was in The Rover as well, which he was the tough guy, I guess.
Yeah, but again, it's more of an art house kind of film. And the same like Memento, he's the lead, but it's an art house film.
And Priscilla.
Very art house, which is, okay.
Is he the tough guy in that, out of the three?
I don't know. I've never actually seen
one
Priscilla.
One of them punches out someone. I think it might have been him.
I think it's Terrence Stamp that does the punching, isn't it? Hugo Weaving?
It's not Hugo Weaving.
It's not? Okay.
I don't think so. Anyway, I like that one. I like the Aussie. There's only one room for one Aussie in Hollywood. Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Again, I don't subscribe to this theory, but you know.
It is fun to talk about.
Yeah. It is fun. We've been talking about it for 34 minutes and I've been having a ball.
Yeah. We don't. And you know,
can we stop now?
I feel like we haven't gone into female actors as much. And I think there's a lot more at play with women in Hollywood. And that
because the idea that there's limited amount of roles and that after a certain age.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I mean, I've heard it said that Amy Adams has been taking all the good roles. It seems now that Jennifer Lawrence is taking all the good roles for people in their 20s.
I don't think...
I mean, Emma Stone has some of them, but they're not really the same ones.
Well, I hear people saying that Sandra Bullock is now taking all the roles that Julia Roberts...
Yes.
Could be getting
all the like 40 to 50 year olds,
yeah, and they're all the roles that Meryl Streep was hogging,
yeah,
10 20 years ago.
Mm.
Is that the case? I don't know,
maybe market correction. Helen Hunt and insert any one of those,
what, as Sandra Bullock,
yeah, no, maybe Jodie Foster or something.
Well,
late 90s, early 2000s.
Is Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock taking all Jodie Foster's roles?
Maybe. This is half-baked.
I know, but this is good. It's good. As much as I don't like this idea, there is some kind of validity to it in some way.
Like Ryan Reynolds, it seems like he was primed for something.
See, he's a different case. We've talked about this on our own time before about how there was a great article that questioned how did Ryan Reynolds become...
That was by Bill Simmons.
There you go.
Yeah.
This guy's a genius. But how did Ryan Reynolds become a mega movie star?
Yeah.
Because he never had...
He didn't have the career path trajectory, really.
No.
But then it's funny because that article was a couple of years ago now, and it's become clear that he's not a movie star, wouldn't you say? He's not a mega movie star. He's not making movies off his own name and getting people to go and watch them. I love him, and you do, I think. I think he's in another universe. He's like huge, and he deserves to be huge because he's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Deadpool's the one that's going to do it for him.
Maybe, but the thing is, he's already been leading films, but no one went to see them.
Yeah,
I mean, Safe House should have been a massive film with him and Denzel. Wasn't really that big. R.I.P.D. flopped so hard.
That wasn't good, was it?
I haven't seen it. I didn't bother. There's nothing in his career that makes you go, like in his early career, that is actually a breakthrough role. All of a sudden, he was just there. He was ubiquitous.
Yeah, he was in the third Blade movie, I think.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good. And he was so ripped in that I think people started to go, wait a second, this guy can do action.
Yeah.
He's not just the funny guy from Two Guys, Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Or Van Wilder.
Oh yeah, Van Wilder. Yeah.
You know, that's his calling card movie early in his career, and he does Blade Trinity, and then pops up in just a whole bunch of crap like Amityville Horror.
Yeah, I think
Smoke and Aces.
I think that if Green Lantern had done well, it would all be a different story.
Again, another flop that he headlined.
But he hasn't been. You don't think he's been market corrected?
I think he's just picked a whole bunch of bad films. But he still doesn't have like the deal maker movie in his catalog.
Mm.
Right. I don't think it's a market correction thing. I think he hasn't. Yeah.
Is he going to get there?
Deadpool might be the one.
Yeah.
But again,
it's kind of niche.
It's a niche superhero film that
yeah.
a lot of really loud nerds have been yelling for.
Yeah.
And then
like us.
Well, yeah, I've totally put my hand up in that group. But and then Sony or Fox? Fox turned around and went, you know what, all right, we'll listen to the loud nerds.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that big a film, I don't think.
It'll make its budget back. I don't think it's a movie that my dad's going to see, like The Avengers or whatever.
Well, and because the fans want like the hard R-rated, foul mouth, bloody version of Deadpool.
Pretty much Kick-Ass, but with Marvel, I guess.
Yeah, well, they want the comic book version.
Yeah.
Which is going to have a really limited appeal.
But it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so rad.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening. I don't know what this podcast was about, really, but it's been fun.
Can I just qualify, though, that Ryan Reynolds is actually a great actor?
Yeah. I can't say that I've seen him in many dramatic roles.
Buried. Buried is amazing.
I think I've avoided his dramatic roles somehow.
Watch Buried. It's him in a box for 90 minutes, and it's unbelievably awesome.
Mm.
Like, I just can't rate that high enough. And I really want to see The Voices, and one of our friends saw it recently and said it's amazing as well. And it's another kind of comedic but dark kind of straight role that, looks really good.
Cool. I'm going to put together a dream team of my, actors who should be huge.
Yeah, okay, let's do that.
Casey Affleck, Topher Grace.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got so much time for Taylor Kitsch. I love John Carter. No one else loved it, and he was the only half-decent thing in Battleship.
Yeah. He's Tim Riggins. Anyone that's...
He's Gambit.
No, he's Tim Riggins.
He's Gambit.
He's Riggins.
He's okay. John Carter.
Anyway, thanks for listening. As always, let us know what you think on Facebook or the Twitters.
Tell us. I'm really keen to hear what people actually think about
this. Is this theory bollocks, or is there something to it?
Is it sliding doors, or is it the market? Is it the way Hollywood works?
That's it. You can tell us on Twitter. Matt's at Dr. Matt Neal. I'm at Jono himself. Have a super terrific week.